Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast. Thanks very much for downloading us. Do tell your friends about us. Rate us every week. We like to be rated and judged, so please do. And if you have something you want to tell us, you can always email me at ageprooflife@gmail.com or udocs@gmail.com. Thanks very much again. This is the guest segment, the B segment, and we have a wonderful guest for you today, Dr. Chris Ogilvie, who is a director of the endovascular and operative neurovascular surgery at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center Brain Aneurysm Institute. He's also a professor of neurosurgery at Harvard Medical School. The subject is basically brain aneurysms and how important and how you can know if you have a family history of one, what to do about it, and what symptoms are. So let's get started. Dr. Ogilvie, thanks very much for coming on. I should say before we let him even talk that you can find out more about brain aneurysm at BAFound, B as in brain, A as in aneurysm, found, FOUND.org, or just Google at Beth Israel Deaconess, BIDAC, brain aneurysm, and you'll find him. So, Dr. Ogilvie, thanks very much for coming on.
Thanks very much for having me.
So, how common is brain aneurysm?
Well, if you look at autopsy studies from the 70s and early 80s, of course, we don't do as many autopsy studies anymore because people know why their loved one passed away. But in previous epoch, people would do autopsy studies where they can look at, you know, 800 or 1,000 autopsies in a row. People who've died from anything, some from aneurysms, some from other things. And you can find a brain aneurysm in somewhere between 2 to 4% of the population, which is actually quite a high number. Now, not all of those have ruptured, and many of them are unruptured and remain unruptured. And what happened in the 80s and,
before we go any further, so a rupture is a bad thing. That means a busted blood vessel, and the blood and the arterial side is under pressure, so it can compress the brain. Is that right?
That is true. And just take a step back. An aneurysm is a bubble on the artery in the brain. It's a weak spot, a bulging that forms a bubble on the artery. And that's what breaks. You're exactly right. Aneurysm rupture is a bad thing, a dangerous thing. It's attended by about a 50% overall mortality, and of the survivors, about a third of them do not do well. A third of them get back to normal life and are able to resume work and normal existence, and a third are sort of in between, definitely.
And what causes these to form? And then, so 2 to 4% of us have them. Some of them rupture, some of them don't. Of the 2 to 4%, if you said, what percent of people actually undergo life and develop a ruptured aneurysm as a major life event?
So that's a much lower incidence. That's probably on the order, we talk about these statistics, 16 per 100,000 in North America, the current number, pretty much the number most people use.
So that's a little less than 0.2%.
That is correct, yes, that actually rupture per year. That's the rupture rate per year. If you do
over a lifetime, it may be as many as, if you said 30%, 30 years, it may be as many as 4% then.
That is true. And in the actual, the way the statistics run, when you have an aneurysm, and we can talk in a minute about size, but depending on the size, the rupture rates run somewhere for unruptured aneurysms, we think, somewhere on the order between a little less than 1% a year up to as high as 4% or 5% a year. And that's a cumulative risk. That means that every year the patient is exposed to that risk. And it doesn't quite add up like interest on your house, but it's a cumulative number. So over 20 years, the risk of rupture is obviously much higher than over 5 years.
And now the other component of this is, you talked about size. So the bigger the aneurysm is, the weaker the wall. Is that a invariable or is that not? Or is there,
you know,
we've
tried to do the physics of it. The physics of it don't quite match the numbers. Here's the way the numbers shake down. In the early 90s, there was a big study done for unruptured aneurysms. So anyone we found with an unruptured aneurysm, 50 different institutions were part of it around the world. We entered these patients for study, and we followed them whether they were fixed or whether they were left alone. A flaw in the study is it was not randomized. So people were selected for treatment by the patient's interest or the doctor's interest. The point was that the people who were not fixed, the smaller aneurysms had a lower rupture risk. And small in that study was under about 7 millimeters. Now, that's not a magic number, because the confusing part comes when you go to look at people who come in the hospital with a rupture and realize that about 80% of those patients have aneurysms smaller than 10 millimeters. So this is very confusing for patients and families, because on the one hand, we're saying that if an aneurysm is small and unruptured, it's less likely to bleed. Yet when they bleed, they're likely to be small. And we still haven't figured out that discrepancy, to be honest, in medicine.
Now, you told us that they're fairly life-threatening. 50% of the people don't survive at all, as I remember what you said just a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
So these are really a very serious condition if you have it. How do you know if you have one of these?
Well, at the first time of hemorrhage, let me clarify that 50%. 20% of people with an aneurysm hear these stories that some youngish 30, 40, 50-year-old man or woman collapsed and died immediately of a brain aneurysm. About 20% of people have almost immediate death from them. The other percentage of that 50% of patients who succumb to them can make it to the hospital, but then can succumb to the sequela because they can end up in the hospital after being in coma. The way you tell if an aneurysm is ruptured is patients often describe the worst headache of their life. They feel like they've been hit on the head with a baseball bat. There is video that's caught people while they're having a hemorrhage, and they're stunned for a few seconds because the blood system is open to the brain so that the pressure in the brain goes very high for just a fraction of a second, and they only bleed for a fraction of a second, and then they seal themselves off. However, the chance of another hemorrhage in the next few days or a couple of weeks is very high.
So what I take from that, and correct me or tell me where we should change, is if you have one of these bad headaches and it seals, and if you will, it goes away, that doesn't mean everything's okay. In fact, it means you should probably, if you've got the worst headache you've ever had in your life, get to an emergency room or a neurovascular surgeon. Is that right?
Yeah, that is absolutely true. But the problem is they're sometimes more subtle than that. A person who has migraines may have a particularly bad headache. But, you know, if they see a physician, they say, well, you have migraines, it's just a bad migraine. But it can be a hemorrhage. And then if there's any, what we say, focal neurologic problem, meaning weakness in an arm or a leg, double vision, something that's not normal in terms of their neurologic evaluation, that also can portend a hemorrhage. Now, you said that if they can seal off and go away, the aneurysm seals off, but the headache can still remain intense for days. And it's associated with nausea, vomiting, a stiff neck. These are all signs because the blood actually sprays around the brain and irritates the covering on the brain to give these symptoms.
So after you get the headache, you would still feel what would you sense? Help us out.
Patients still have once they develop the intense headache, which they describe as coming out of the blue, like a lightning bolt, that headache persists for sometimes days. And we have had patients call their physician or just try to blow it off, or the physician says, well, it's just a migraine, give them aspirin. But the headache persists in a way they've never had it persist before. The patient often knows there's something wrong. And it's still a problem of misdiagnosis in this country, that about 20% of aneurysms are still misdiagnosed at original presentation because the symptoms can be fairly mild. And yet those are the very patients we have the greatest chance of getting through it without any problem.
So this obviously presents a dilemma. How do we make this diagnosis or help the patient when we're
what
not sure?
What has to happen is, that is exactly right, and what has to happen, the physician, and we're working now with medical schools, being sure physicians are educated as they're schooled to realize these things. Just think about subarachnoid hemorrhage, which is the kind of hemorrhage you get from an aneurysm, subarachnoid hemorrhage. If you think it, then the way to say they've had it or haven't had it, or as you know, rule it in or rule it out, is to do a CAT scan. Plain CAT scan, which takes only minutes to do, and show blood at the base of the brain, and that's indicative of a hemorrhage.
And so, but if they haven't, if they don't have a hemorrhage yet, that is, they, is there any, you don't, without a, in a plain film, that is a plain CT scan, you don't see that bulge in blood vessels, or do you?
That is correct. So this is a big dilemma. The what you're talking about now is the unruptured aneurysm, which many people are walking around with and they don't know how they have them. When, over the years, now we see many of these because of improved imaging, improved MRI and CT angiography or CTA. And people get these for all kinds of reasons, because they do have migraines, because they hit their head, because they have cancer and they're being screened. And on these tests now, we're finding unruptured aneurysms. And the dilemma there is who to treat and who to leave alone.
So
we have a whole team assembled for that.
Now, Dr. Ogilvie, and I should say, Dr. Ogilvie, the way to get a hold of him is, again, at BAFound, B as for brain, A as in aneurysm, found as in foundation, FOUND.org, BAFound.org, or Beth Israel, B-I-Deaconess, B-I-D, A-C, and
MC.
Look at...
B-I-D,
say it again. BID,
BIDM, as in Michael, medical, yeah.
Medical center, BI Deaconess, so Beth Israel Deaconess, BIDMC, and then search for Brain Aneurysm Foundation or Brain Aneurysm Research, or Dr. Ogilvie.
Brain Aneurysm Institute. Yep.
Institute.
Brain Aneurysm Institute. We have a whole thing dedicated to this.
And you'll find him. So the... now, the if you so those are those asymptomatic ones are found when you get not just a what we call a plain CT or a CT without imaging of the arteries, but they're when they inject a dye in order to show your arteries. Is that right, or do you see them without?
That
the
is correct.
Dye? So
that
it's
is
with
correct.
The dye,
and there are. It's you need some type of dye. If you do an MRI, you can actually see them without dye. An MRI, MRA, which is MR angiography. And it's the only real indication to go out and get a scan is if there's a family history. And a family history constitutes two or more blood relatives. So a parent and a child, a grandparent and a grandchild. Once there's two or more members in a family that are identified, the rest of the family is screened. Aneurysms run in families in about 22% of patients.
Say that again, about 22% of the people with aneurysms are family members. Is that
have
what you're...
Have a family history, yes.
Gotcha. Now the... if we can say so, let's say the person has a headache... What's then the next step in the workout? I say you've had the worst headache you've had ever. You go to an urgent care center. What typically will happen then?
At that point, the patient should have a CAT scan. And the CAT scan usually shows blood on it, even a plain CAT scan. If it doesn't and the physician is still suspicious, one can perform what's called a lumbar puncture, where we drain cerebrospinal fluid and look at it for blood, but only after a CAT scan, because in many cases, the CAT scan will show it. Once that's demonstrated, we do tests to look where the aneurysm is, what it is, the size, and to decide how best to treat it, because there's a couple of ways to treat these things.
And so tell us the ways, how one of the questions, obviously, is how dangerous is the surgery to treat these things when they're found at this stage?
Well, at this stage, treating a ruptured aneurysm has a little higher risk because it has ruptured. Treating an unruptured aneurysm has a lower risk. And the key is to have all the tools in the toolbox, as we say. These can be treated by making an incision in the side of the scalp, removing a small plate of bone, and going in and clipping the aneurysm off using a microscope to seal off the bad part of the vessel. The other way they can be repaired is endovascular. Endo is inside vascular vessel. By going up, typically from the groin artery, through the arteries to the aneurysm with a small catheter, and then we can place coils inside the aneurysm, which then clot the aneurysm off to the inside. There's other devices we can use, stents, which go in the artery to buttress the coils. But basically, there are several techniques to be placed inside the artery to get rid of the aneurysm, which is much less invasive.
So you're going inside the artery to get rid of it. And
correct.
Now, these are relatively new techniques, right? When I trained, there was a guy named Nick Zervis at the Beth Israel who did aneurysm surgery.
Open surgery.
Right. That was all open.
So Nick Zervis is a good friend of mine. It was my chairman at Mass General for a number of years. And things have evolved dramatically since then. In fact, he helped foster it. But these endovascular techniques have evolved in the last 20 years dramatically. So what used to take hours and have very high risk to do 15 years ago can now be done in 20 or 30 minutes with a 2 or 3% risk of a problem. Very difficult to deal with these aneurysms with no risk, but we're getting to the point where we can offer low-risk treatment. Because obviously while you're trying to fix it, they can rupture again. That's one of the biggest risks when an aneurysm is ruptured to begin with.
You have been receiving an incredible education, that is the listener, in brain aneurysm. We've been talking with Dr. Chris Ogilvie, who is the director of endovascular, which means inside the blood vessel, I think, and operative neurovascular surgery at the BI Deaconess Medical Center, BIDMC Brain Aneurysm Institute. If you want to search for him, Ogilvie, O-G-I-L-V-Y, as it sounds. You also can go to BAFound, FOUND.org to find out more about brain aneurysm. It's written in plain English, so all of us can learn about it. In any case, we've been talking with, and hopefully you've gotten a wonderful education, as I have, about the state of brain aneurysm surgery and what to do if you have a bad headache. Get to a doctor as soon as possible, probably an urgent care center, or if they're not open, an emergency room, because this is, if you really do have one of these issues, an emergency, because as Dr. Ogilvie said, often these rupture 2 or 3 or 4 days later. Thanks very much, Dr. Ogilvie. Ben, thanks for great engineering, but especially thank you, the listener, for downloading us. Do rate us. We'll be back next week. This is number 296B in the podcast series. I'm sorry. 926, same numbers, just misorder. 926B in the podcast series. We've been doing it more than 18 years. So thanks very much for downloading us, and do rate us. We'll be back next week with both another great guest and the news of the week and what it means to you so you can live at the top of your curve. Thanks again.